Welcome to the Words with Jam podcast. This month we bring you Imagine by Libby O'Loughlin, read by its author. Imagine is part of an anthology of stories in which everyday lives collide with world-shattering events. Here, Cleopatra Smith navigates school friendships, the death of her aunt, and John Lennon's assassination.
Imagine. 1980 started on a Tuesday. The reason Cleopatra Smith knew this was that it was the year she ought to have turned 10, but, like everyone else born in a leap year, on paper she remained 3. A fact about which her twin brothers, Newton and Winston, relentlessly teased her. On paper they were 13, but because they were born on the same day, they were keen to point out that in fact combined they were 26. Real problems of 1980 began halfway through the Christmas break when Aunt Margaret got sick. A.M. has a brain tumour, is how Winston broke the news to Cleo. Newton nodded. Cleo, at the time, was doing a world map jigsaw with their across-the-road neighbour Sally, and she didn't like to appear as though she had never heard of such a thing as a brain tumour until then. So she nodded and popped a piece of the North Sea in place. Sally immediately clapped a hand to her mouth, which Cleo assumed was mainly for effect. Sally was the sort of girl who liked to think she knew about all manner of things. She'd come over to assist with the jigsaw the very minute she heard it was a map of the world, for instance, because she claimed to know a great deal about foreign countries, having visited Ireland once when she was 3. Still, despite her brother's insistence that a brain tumour may not be fatal and things might take a turn for the better, Cleo was dubious. Firstly, how could you take a chunk out of someone's brain and expect it's going to fix them? This was Cleo's main concern. But secondly, anyone who knew Aunt Margaret would realise that her odd behaviour began a long time ago, if indeed there ever was a beginning, since she'd been like that for as long as anyone could remember. It was worrying to think that she might not be that person when she came out of hospital. The fact that she believed she was a member of the royal family was just something you grew to accept. By the time Cleo and her brothers returned to school in the new year, plans were afoot to move Aunt Margaret into the spare room so she could get used to her new home before the operation. It would be a bit of a shock to have to come home to an unfamiliar environment, was the general reasoning, though Winston said he thought it would be fine, because she might just think she'd been moved to the country estate to recuperate. To which their mother frowned and said, "Even so." As they trudged up the hill to school, Cleo told Sally she thought they were bonkers putting A.M. in the spare room, since the only reason you'd go in there was if you wanted to see your breath incarnated or you were on expedition to the North Pole, which couldn't be good for a brain tumour. Sally told her she'd been to the North Pole, or at least she was planning to, but not until probably next summer when it would be warmer. The girls shed their coats and gloves and headed straight for the change rooms, expecting the sports teacher, Mrs. McDougall, to greet them with her usual, "Get on with it, then!" Mrs. McDougall was nowhere to be seen, however, and the girls, it was a girls' school, wandered in dribs and drabs into the gym, where a beaming Miss Roundtree bounded to the centre of the room and landed her feet in what Cleo recognised as ballet position 1. Her hands were on her hips, and she looked like the cat who'd stolen the cream. "She thinks she's French," whispered Sally. "But she's not, I can tell." Cleo presumed Sally had been thrown off guard by the black catsuit leotard and the fact that Miss Roundtree's usually lanky hair had been transformed into a scraped-back bun of sorts. Cleo herself was so surprised to see their rather plump sewing teacher in a leotard that she forgot to loathe her own 2 small plimsolls and 2 stiff shorts. Miss Roundtree bent over to switch on a large black cassette player Cleo had never seen before. She felt compelled to cast a look at Sally, who clearly hadn't ever seen it either, judging by her open mouth. Though it did occur to Cleo that Sally may have been looking at Miss Roundtree's substantial bottom, which she had never seen before either. As the music started up, Miss Roundtree crowed, "Let's gallop!" and leapt across the gymnasium like Black Beauty. Perhaps because she recognised the song on the cassette as one of her mother's favourites, it was Cliff Richard, or perhaps to save her teacher some embarrassment, Cleo grabbed Sally's hand and followed her teacher. Miss Roundtree didn't seem at all embarrassed, but rather seemed to be quite a different person in a leotard than the one who quietly advised on colour-matching felts and cottons on a Tuesday afternoon. After a bracing gallop, Miss Roundtree's cheeks were red, and she switched the cassette to a slower song. "One of my favourites in the whole world," she said, with an expansive arm movement that could have been one of the ballet positions, but Cleo wasn't sure. "Has she been to the whole world?" Sally murmured, her tone a little tart. "Imagine there's no heaven," Miss Roundtree sang loudly in time with the words of the song. "Follow me, girls, let's start small like seeds and we'll grow and grow into beautiful trees." She rewound the tape and Cleo obediently crouched on the floor and waited for the piano to start again. She watched Sally from under the tent of her arms, but Sally seemed to be making a good go of being a seed, so Cleo turned her attention back to the music. By the time Cleo got home from school, the spare room was occupied and resembled a tropical oasis. The door stood open and the view out the window was surprisingly impressive. You could see Sally's house, as well as the great chestnut tree which stood on the edge of the lane. She took a moment to look at that tree, having only seen it from below before now. She had more of an interest in trees today, too, since Miss Roundtree had opened her eyes, she supposed, to the possibilities of growing into one herself. In her imagination, at least. "The room has heating, you big dummy," Winston hissed, perhaps curious that she had stopped in her tracks. "Mum just never turned it on before." Newton said, "Have you welcomed Her Majesty yet?" and giggled into his collar. Cleo glared at her brothers, but went into the room and curtsied. She left again quite quickly when she saw her aunt was asleep, and let her brothers decide for themselves if Aunt Margaret was just sleeping or was in fact dead. She wasn't dead, of course, that was to come later in the year, but Cleo found she was relieved and a bit pleased to see her aunt sweep into the dining room that evening and stand by her chair. Cleo could only presume this whole idea of imagining there was no heaven, above us only sky, as the John Lennon song said, might have been preying on her mind just a little. Sally's view had been it that if there wasn't a hell below us, then it didn't matter if you couldn't go to heaven because you only needed heaven to get out of hell. It's quite an Italian idea. Cleo hadn't been so sure, but left it at that because Sally didn't want to wait around under the chestnut tree for Cleo to find a good late-season conker to beat Winston with. Now at the table, Cleo's father cleared his throat, so everyone stood and waited for him to pull out Aunt Margaret's seat for her. "Do sit, everyone," Aunt Margaret said, and gave a gracious smile. She wore her long tartan nightgown that evening, pulled and tied tightly at the neck. Cleo thought it looked like her aunt's head was popping out of a Santa sack, but she didn't say so. Aunt Margaret gripped the back of her chair with thin brown fingers as she moved to sit. Cleo's mother served the baked beans. By April that year, Aunt Margaret had been in and out of hospital and was back in the spare room, only this time with much less hair. It was a bit like very short fairy floss and made her look surprisingly youthful. Cleo wondered if Aunt Margaret was quite a bit younger than she'd originally thought. When she expressed this, her mother said, "Well, she's my younger sister, and I'm not that old." Cleo realised her mother was making light of it, but she could tell there was a bit of worry involved. She had that same tone of voice she'd had when Newton fell off his bike and knocked half of one of his front teeth out last year. "It's just a tooth," had been Newton's response, and at first he seemed proud of his battle wounds. "At least now people will be able to tell us apart, hey, Winnie?" he said. But the boys stood inspecting each other's teeth in silence for some time after that, and Cleo realised then that her brothers were not really prepared yet for a change of this magnitude in their lives. The relief of it all was that Aunt Margaret still expected doors to be opened for her, and Cleo noticed she had begun to use the royal we. Newton and Winston did too. "We are not amused," they said, whenever Cleo or Sally made a joke. But it was actually a bit funny, especially since they looked at each other down their noses while they said it. "I doubt the Queen would have great honking chips out of her front tooth," Sally said once, but that didn't go down quite so well. So she quickly said, "My father has gone to the Canary Islands, you know." That did go down well, though Cleo wondered if the twins knew Sally was serious. Firstly, that there was a place called the Canary Islands, and secondly, that her father had really gone there. Your dad goes away a lot, Cleo noted, and hoped her voice sounded thoughtful. You would too if you had more important things to do. Cleo nodded. I would. Besides, someone has to sort out this country's messes. This time, it's a plane crash. She rolled her eyes as though she'd had just enough. Cleo had no idea at all what a country's mess might look like. Surely not just body parts strewn across the countryside. But she nodded again as though she did. She suspected Sally might not know either, but didn't say so. That night, she casually asked her father what the country's mess might be while she was buttering her toast. Her father laughed. Goodness, where should I start? Monetarist, Nazism, interest rates, public health. Aunt Margaret rapped the table with her knuckles. I won't have any talk of politics at the table. Cleo was so surprised at the volume of her aunt's voice that it wasn't until a few minutes later she realized Aunt Margaret had forgotten to use the royal we. She wondered if anyone else had noticed, but thought not, since the meal continued with the usual chat about homework and sport. She made sure she told the family about Miss Rowntree's plan for the class to perform the song Imagine at the end-of-year concert. Good song, said her father. A world without countries or religions. He paused and looked at Aunt Margaret. Sorry, A.M., shouldn't talk religion at the table. Aunt Margaret nodded graciously. We are not amused, mimed the twins. Aunt Margaret was not quite so well when the boys' birthday rolled around that year. It put a bit of a dampener on the whole affair, as they had planned to sleep out in tents that weekend. The sleep out was to go ahead in the back garden, but Aunt Margaret started to make appearances in her dressing gown and slippers, which sent Newton into a rage so that he had to run full pelt around the block twice in order to recover himself. At least she was wearing something, Cleo's mother said under her breath when Winston aired his dissatisfaction. He snatched the bowl of little frankfurters from her hands and stomped out of the kitchen. Cleo privately thought he was the one behaving in a rather royal manner, but as she watched him cross the lawn, she did feel a bit sorry for him. Teenage boys seemed to be concerned about things like dressing gowns, at least in front of their friends. It probably hadn't helped that Aunt Margaret had waved the royal wave as she walked the stretch of vegetable garden in front of the tents, but she was safely tucked up in bed again now doing some cross-stitch, so perhaps it was going to be all right. It was all right, but it also wasn't. The all right bit was that the boys talked about that sleep out for months, really months, afterwards, and Aunt Margaret's regal garden turns didn't rate a mention. You'd think they could shut up about it by now, Sally said, in what Cleo knew to be called an acerbic tone. They were waiting for Miss Rowntree to return with the holly hobby needle holder patterns for sewing class. It was November, so maybe Sally had a point, was what Cleo thought. But she also knew that the huffy demeanour was mainly due to the fact that Sally hadn't been invited to the sleepout. Cleo thought it a bit rich to be complaining and told her so. But I'm one of their friends, Sally persisted. They just think they're too good for their own good. Pretty soon they'll think they're part of the royal family too, and the next thing you know they'll be moving to Paris or something. Could be, but sometimes you have to try and put yourself in someone else's shoes. I can do that. I do it all the time. Cleo was quiet, since it felt like Sally might need to say something. She was looking a bit weepy. This is the not-all-right bit, which Cleo wished was not real. The thing is, people shouldn't go somewhere else, Sally sniffled. Even like the back garden, because they might end up staying there and then you'd never see them. They might even end up finding another family somewhere. Cleo stayed quiet because Sally was now having a good cry. And when Miss Rowntree returned, she stood immediately and pointed at Sally, with what she hoped was an imploring expression on her face. Miss Rowntree was not one to waste time, and she immediately dumped the pile of felts on her desk and galloped over to the girls, where she crouched down and put an arm around Sally. Cleo could see a lot of cleavage from that angle, and felt like she had the day when she saw the chestnut tree from above. It made her feel quite tall and strong, though this may have been slightly over-enhanced by the fact that Sally was obviously not feeling at all strong right now. Cleo sat next to her friend and put a hand on her knee. She didn't say anything because she knew she risked sounding like she didn't know what Sally was crying about. Instead, she did what she had observed her mother doing with Aunt Margaret, which was to nod and say, and pat arms or knees. By dinner that night, Cleo was very tired of things in general. She gave Winston a good wallop on the arm when he called her Queen Cleopatra, and stomped as loudly as she could up the stairs when told to leave the room. A small voice called out from the tropical bedroom at the top of the stairs, and Cleo ignored it for as long as she could. "Lizzie?" Cleo sighed loudly and went to her aunt. She managed a curtsy as she entered. Aunt Margaret was lying back on two enormous pillows, but even though Cleo thought they would probably be as soft as marshmallow, Aunt Margaret didn't look quite that comfortable. Unfortunately, she wasn't enjoying the view of Sally's house either, as her eyes were closed. "Lizzie," Aunt Margaret whispered, "I need Lizzie." Cleo ran straight downstairs and got her mother. Tuesday, December the 9th, was not a good day for lots of people, Cleo decided. During the very early morning, Aunt Margaret had been shipped off in an ambulance, and by the time Cleo and her brothers were ready for school, they learned that she had died even before she reached the hospital. "I guess it might not be so bad to die in an ambulance," Winston said, and Cleo could tell he was trying to look on the bright side. "Should we even go to school? Doesn't seem right somehow." "You'll go to school," their father said, "and when you get home, you'll be nice to your mother. I have to get along to the hospital now. See you at tea." That was as far as that conversation went, though Cleo mentioned to Sally that her aunt had gone. Sally became a bit stiff and formal and said, "Oh," a few times, as though she was a bit lost for words. At the end of the laneway, she said, "Moved away, kind of gone, like to Israel, or dead gone?" "Dead." At that, Sally began cheerfully waffling on about Scotland, and Cleo knew that her friend was relieved. If it were anyone else, it would have been an inappropriate reaction, but it was Sally, and Cleo was grateful that things seemed to be on a more normal course. At lunch, however, things didn't go so well. Cleo and Sally took advantage of the rainy lunch hour to go up to the sewing room to work on their Holly Hobby needle holders, which both of them planned to give their mothers for Christmas. Cleo had opted for lime green and salmon felts to match her homemade Christmas stocking. She still felt a bit guilty about wanting to shred it last Christmas when she couldn't get her presents out. She was looking forward to the thrilled expression on her mother's face when she presented her gift. When the girls entered the sewing room, however, Miss Roundtree was sitting on the windowsill, sniffling into a handkerchief. Goodness, don't mind me," she said, with what Cleo knew to be fake cheerfulness. Sure enough, the smile on the teacher's face lasted only an instant before she seemed unable to find the energy to maintain it. Her whole body looked like a sack of potatoes, and Cleo could feel Sally's alarmed look long before she saw it. Cleo, for her part, wasn't sure what to do. She could see her Holly Hobby on the desk at the back of the classroom, not a few steps away, but something inside her told it would be best not to go there directly. Miss Roundtree, she decided, must have a broken heart, which was going to make sewing class a bit awkward unless something could be done. She told Sally to get out the thread while she got Miss Roundtree a glass of water. Their teacher didn't speak for what seemed like a few hours, but just sat there while Sally and Cleo got on with their sewing. Eventually, she said, "It's John, the man who wrote our song, Imagine. He died yesterday in America." Sally's mouth fell open, and she said, "That's a coincidence. Cleo's aunt died too, only she died this morning in an ambulance." Miss Roundtree looked at Cleo, and Cleo was worried that she was about to start weeping again, but she just said quite softly, "Oh, Cleo, I'm so sorry." Cleo shrugged. "It's not your fault. She had a brain tumour." Miss Roundtree put her hand to her forehead and shook her head. She sighed. Then she stood up and straightened her skirt. "What do you think? Shall we have a cup of tea?" Cleo and Sally looked at each other with glee and jumped up to get out the tea and the teacups. As Miss Roundtree poured water from the kettle, she said, "Don't let my collywobbles worry you. Sometimes even teachers cry." Sally nodded, her expression serious. "I know all about that. And you feel better afterwards. I don't even mind that my dad lives in Edinburgh now." Cleo pondered this and thought of her own father, who was most likely doing something helpful down at the hospital at that moment, or even just patting her mother on the knee, who was probably having a good cry right now. Cleo wondered if she might have a cry too. But it didn't feel like it was quite the right moment, what with John having died and Sally's dad having moved away from England. Instead, she said, "Well, you can still listen to the music." Miss Roundtree nodded, but Sally shrugged, presumably because she thought Cleo was talking to her. "I suppose we could," Sally said slowly, "but he sang a lot of stuff about getting rid of countries and religions, and I'm not so sure about that. I mean, I have an international family to consider now, and I might move overseas one day myself." Miss Roundtree nodded. "Yes," she said, "of course. It's very important to have dreams." Cleo nodded too, because she couldn't help thinking about Aunt Margaret and the time she hadn't used the royal plural, when Cleo's dad had been talking about the public health system. She considered just then that her aunt had probably known since the operation that she wasn't the queen. And the fact that she kept up the charade was just her way of making it easier for the children to imagine a way through their exposure to her seizures and her shaking hands and her night frights. It was, Cleo suspected, AM's funny way of loving them. As she sipped her tea that Tuesday afternoon, Cleo thought now might be a good time to cry.